yeah, how they felt about Muslims. And it was, yeah, something that I totally like disconnected myself with and kind of put it on the back burner. Like, yeah, that's not who I am. And I'm just embarrassed to admit that I am that. And now when I look at it, I'm like, it's kind of a part of me that I was like pushing away.
You're listening to the How Do You Deal With podcast with me, your host, Joelle Writing. Each week, we're talking about the parts of life that we all wish we could talk about. I hope you're ready to dive in. Let's get started. What's up, what's up, what's up, guys? Welcome back to How Do You Deal With. If this is your first time here, hello, hello, and welcome to the fam. If you're a returning listener, thank you for continuing to support the show and tuning in. I appreciate you guys so much. Today, we have an incredible guest. Her name is Yasmin, and she is a love coach based out of California. I met her back when I visited California a few months ago, and I was just instantly drawn to her energy and just her overall like sweet nature. I asked her to come on the show to share her story about growing up in the US with Iranian parents. The main reason behind this podcast and the reason that I love it so much is I love to have people come on and share their experiences in hopes that you all listening can learn something or put yourself in someone else's shoes that have had different experiences than you. So I was really excited to have Yasmin on because I feel like in the US especially, we are told a certain story about the Middle East, and that story only covers a tiny fraction of the countries and peoples and cultures over there. So Yasmin comes on and talks about what it was like growing up in the US and also provides a bunch of history and information about Iran and its culture. I really hope that you enjoyed this episode because I sure did, because wow, I learned so much about Iran that like I had no idea about. And so yes, it's such a good episode. And thank you, Yasmin, for coming on, giving us a little history lesson and talking about your experience. So thank you guys for tuning in. Let's get going. What is up, guys? Welcome back to How Do You Deal With. I am so excited to have Yasmin in the studio today to talk all about her background, her family. Like, she is just an incredible woman that I got to meet a couple weeks ago when I went to LA for our mastermind. And oh my gosh, she is just such a light. And I'm so excited for our conversation today. Hello, hello, welcome.
Hi, I'm so excited as well.
Well, let's get going and like, tell me about you. Tell me about where you're living, what you've been doing, where are you from? Let's get this thing going.
So I live in Huntington Beach, California. I'm originally from LA and I am a self-love coach. My background is I'm Persian. My parents are both Iranian. I was born here. They were both born in Iran, and my parents moved here when there was a revolution. So I feel blessed because I'm like an American Iranian and get to live in this beautiful country.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. Okay. So I think that we talked about this a couple of weeks ago or when I met you, but like, for those who don't know, also like I could use more of a history lesson. Like, what was the revolution? Like, why did your parents have to leave?
So the revolution happened in 1979 in Iran. And prior to the revolution, the government structure, it was a monarchy. There was a king. And the economy was just going uphill. The country was thriving. The king, the monarchy, had a great relationship with the U.S. at the time, and they were just developing rapidly. Things were looking great, and this triggered the religious structure of the country, especially like the radical religious leaders. So such an economic upturn was a threat to the radical leaders because the more people became westernized, the more knowledge they had, the more independence they had, there was less control that the radical leaders could have on these people. So essentially, there was an uprising, and there were all these different sects of people who wanted to overthrow the monarchy. And they felt like the monarchy was getting a little too close to the Western world. And I personally don't, like, when I look at it, I don't see a problem with it. But when I look at it through the lens in the 1970s, people then were a lot more traditional than they are now. And I think in their mindset, they thought tradition's going to be lost, the culture's going to be lost if we westernize. So a lot of people felt threatened, felt triggered by this, and they decided to stand up to the government, overthrow the monarchy, and that's what happened. And there was a radical religious leader who said, if you put me in power, I'm going to do X, Y, and Z, made people all these promises. So the people overthrew the monarchy, essentially, and then this radical leader came into power. But as soon as he came into power, it was like night and day. He was a complete different person than what he had promised. And there was like disaster going on in the country. Like he forced the people in the country, everyone had to like cover themselves up, wear a veil, all freedom was taken away. So before that, like people were free to walk in the streets however they wanted to dress, but this freedom was taken away. Women had to cover everything up. Men had to also like wear long sleeves, wear long pants, things like that. Women couldn't even be alone outside. So at that time, anyone who could leave the country left, whoever had the resources to leave, because things were not looking good and all freedom was taken away. So like my family's background is at that time, my dad was in America getting his master's degree. And this was like a common thing for college students to all come to America or England or parts of Europe, get their master's degree, and then go back to the country and work. And this was all supported by the government. The government paid for students to do this. So my dad was already here and the revolution happened. He ended up just staying. And then my mom's family, they stayed for a little bit, and then in the early 80s, the country was pretty compromised. So there was a war between Iraq and Iran, and then Iraq invaded Iran. And then there was like war going on for like a few years too. And that's when my mom's family decided to leave and they moved to London. So it was around that time, the early 80s, whoever could get out of the country left. And a lot of them came to Los Angeles. So Los Angeles is actually called like Tehranjalis. It's like a nickname. It's like the biggest Persian population outside of Iran is there, but they're all over like in Australia, all over Europe. There is like so many Persians that, yeah, who could get out, got out.
I'm so intrigued that it changed so suddenly. Like it blows me away how a leader can like, oh my gosh, it's so scary that you can like run on a platform and you can give all these ideas and tell the people what they want. But then once you're in power, like you can totally switch. Oh my gosh, that's scary. I'm grateful that your dad was over here learning. And what did he get his master's in?
He got it in accounting.
Okay. That's cool also that the government like helped or like would pay for them to go abroad. And then like, that's really cool too. I wish the US would do that. Like,
yeah. And like when I think of the monarchy there was so supportive of the people, and like, it's sort of like, I feel like in my heart that all the people who at the time were supporting the overthrow of the monarchy, like regret it so much because they have it so much worse now with the government because it's a dictatorship and people don't have the freedom. The economy there is horrible. Like, I don't think anyone that lives there right now supports the government or like, and the government doesn't support them either. Like they're only looking out for themselves.
It's still like that.
Yeah, it's still like that, wow. But it's even worse now. Things are not good. I don't know if you heard, but a couple months ago, there was an uprising there and the government shut down everyone's Wi-Fi internet for, I think, like a week or so. So the outside world had no idea what was going on. The government was like killing people in the streets. And like the people there say the death toll was so much more than what the media knows because the government's covering it up and like throwing people's bodies in the rivers and things like that. And this is just like a couple of months ago that happened. So things are like getting worse and worse and worse. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, I had heard like a little bit. Yeah, but not to that extent. Like it is a very like scary time right now in the US even of just like Corona, like the idea of Wi-Fi being shut down, like it's so crazy to think that can happen, that the government can do that.
Right.
Gosh, well, I hope that things get better. Like, have you been to Iran since?
Yeah. So actually, when I was 7 years old, my parents decided to move me and my sister there. And we lived there for 4 years. And I attended all of my elementary school there. So I was there from first to fourth grade, lived there for 4 years. And then I visited a few times since as well. The last time I was there, I want to say, is about 3 or 4 years ago.
Wow. Do you remember like being like in elementary school? Cause that's like,
yes,
I'm so bad about remembering things as a kid. Like, so yeah, you do remember?
That's like one of those things I like clearly remember. Yeah. I remember like the outfits I had. I remember everything. Cause in a sense, like it was awesome, but it was actually a little bit traumatic too. Moving there, especially as a seven-year-old, I loved my life here in America. Like I had friends, I was in elementary school. I loved my elementary school. And when my parents said we're moving there, I was like, I didn't understand. And actually my dad stayed in America. It was just me, my mom, and my sister. So separating from my dad too, that was also really traumatic. And I moved there, and even though I'm Persian and I spoke Farsi at home, I did not fit in at all. Like my Farsi was like Americanized Farsi. So I got to Iran, started first grade, and I was like made fun of as like the American kid. I couldn't like relate to any of those kids. And also in school, America was looked at like as an evil country. So I also had a hard time with that. I'm like, America's awesome. Like, I love America. My dad lives in America. And then at school, teachers are brainwashing us. Like, America's horrible. America's evil. So it was like interesting seeing both sides of it. And also like now I look at it, I'm seeing, wow, the people there were also like brainwashed. And it's sad because at the time too, there was no Wi-Fi. So people didn't have outside knowledge either. It's just all what the government is feeding you. And it's such limited knowledge.
That literally blows me away to hear, because I mean, if you think like Americans are always preaching like, people over there are bad and you got to stay away and like all this stuff. Mm-hmm. And then it's crazy to think that the other side is also preaching the same thing about America. Like that just shook me to my core. Like that's why it's so important to have conversations like this and mm-hmm. also to travel. Like,
yes,
just to be able to see and learn for yourself what you've heard about all these different countries, all these different places, because you have no idea if you're being brainwashed or if mm-hmm. what you're being told is true, because that's your norm. And so, exactly. Wow, I didn't know it went the other way too. That's so crazy.
Yeah. Gosh. And it gives me like compassion for both those people and the Americans, because it's like, we don't know any better. It's like our leaders are telling us these things and we believe what our leaders tell us. But it's also, I think, important to realize like our leaders are telling us things in their own self-interest. And sometimes it's not facts. And like you said, it's important to travel and like experience different cultures to create our own opinions and our own beliefs about different countries and different people.
Yeah. Wow. So much food for thought. What are some of your like favorite parts about Iran? Like when you were there, when you visited, like that, it's really cool that like you kind of have best of both worlds. Like you had it at home, you had like growing up in America, but you also grew up in Iran a little bit. So tell me a little bit about Iran and like what you loved about being over there.
So the culture there is so beautiful. It's known as one of the most like hospitable places, like great in hospitality. Like if you're a tourist and you're walking down the street, like people are going to run up to you, like invite you for tea, like to their shops or their stores, like offer to like show you around. I know, I think Anthony Bourdain said it was like one of the nicest people he's ever met were people in Iran. And the architecture and like the history is so beautiful. There's so many things that were built like thousands of years ago that still stand, like places that are, I want to call them, I forget what it's called, like UNESCO.
Mm-hmm.
There's like so many of that. And there's a lot of like cute little villages who haven't changed for like hundreds and thousands of years. Like they still have homes that are made out of like mud. And it's interesting, like going and visiting those places and seeing like how people, like how differently people live and people thrive. And there's like bazaars. That's where people go and do their shoppings, which are like really cool too. And
what about the food?
Oh my gosh, the food is like so amazing. Like, if you haven't tried Persian food, I highly recommend it. Like, there's stews, there's kebabs, and they are so delicious. Like, I know here in Southern California, like, Persian food is really popular. And I recommend, if you ever like go near a Persian restaurant, or if you're somewhere that has Persian food and you've never tried it, to give it a try.
Yeah, I don't know if I've actually had Persian food. I know I've had Moroccan food, but
very different.
Yeah. I am so going to try to find that. I don't know if Lexington has it.
Maybe next time you're in LA.
Yeah, that too, because apparently that's the spot to get it.
Yes.
Everything, especially the architecture. I know so many people that, especially like a lot of female solo travelers would go to Iran like a few years ago, not now, but their photos were insane. Like, I think the Blue Mosque is there.
There's quite a few blue mosques. Yeah.
Yeah. But like, literally, guys, if you've never seen architecture or mosques in Iran, like, literally just Google it, like, Iranian mosques. Like, it's insane how beautiful and ornate and like colorful everything is.
Yes.
I am so sad I didn't get to go like yet. Like, I hope that one day I will get to go, because
yes,
just what I've seen in pictures and like what I've heard of people is like, yeah, that the people are amazing. The architecture is insane. I've heard such good things about food, which is like main reason why I travel to places, honestly. Yeah, I really hope to get there one day. So, all right. So, great parts about Iran. What were some of the things that you remember like that you didn't love, or that maybe like were a culture shock compared to like America?
So the biggest thing was like having to cover up and wear a veil. So even as a 7-year-old, when I started first grade, I had to like wear a veil. That's what my uniform was. And it was like, It was some like adjusting, because I was like, here in America, I got to wear whatever I want. I remember clearly one day at school, like it was kind of like a PE day. So I like put on shorts under my pants for like PE day, and I got to school and I remember taking my pants off and all the kids like pointing and laughing at me, and they're like, you American girl, like, this isn't America here, you know? And I guess like, you weren't supposed to wear shorts, even though I was going to all girls school. So that was like a big culture shock to me. I was like, yeah. And like, just living there and like just being so limited on things you could do, being limited on things you can do outside, activities, things like that. That was really hard. And also, since it's like such a, I won't say like an isolated country from the rest of the world, there's not like any Western things there. So I remember what I missed most when I was a kid was like American cereal and American candies. Everything there is like manufactured and made in Iran. So they're not like delicious or yummy and things like that. They are in America. Like, I remember cereal there tasting gross, like the chocolates and the candies not being good. And there were like select stores that would have like Western candies, but it would be like 10 times the price of what it would be like to buy it here. So I remember like we wouldn't like be able to buy it much. And then every time my dad would come visit us, like he would come visit us every 6 months, and like he would just fill his suitcase with like Western food or American food.
Yes, I still do that with Belgian food. Like, you know, you can get it in Kentucky or like over here, but it's so much more expensive. And then usually it's like, it's kind of old, like, because it's been sitting on the shelves for forever, versus like if you get it in Belgium, it's newer and like cheaper. So yeah, literally every time we come back with like just an entire suitcase of like waffles and candy and chocolate, and we go crazy because yeah, it's just different like when you can get it from the source.
Exactly.
I'm also curious about like what is like the I guess landscape or like environment, landscape of like Iran. Is it like dry? Is it desert? Is it like mountains? Is it
all the above? So it depends what city you're in, what part of the country you're in. There's like oceanside, there's desert, there's mountains, all of that. Each city has its own unique landscape.
That's really cool. I need to go. Okay.
Yes, I have faith that in a few years, like either the government's going to get overthrown, like things are definitely going to change. So it's going to be a lot more open to tourism.
Yeah. Fingers crossed. Because
yes,
I think the world in general right now is kind of having a shift.
Yes, it is.
So for people who don't know anything about Islam, like, can you give us, you know, kind of the core principles or like the core beliefs of it? Because I know that, you know, we kind of, I feel like it's talked about here, but I feel like people don't really realize how similar it is to every other religion. Like, you know, it has different differences, but like every single religion is actually weirdly similar. And so, you know, same thing with Islam. And like, I would love for you to just kind of, yeah, like for people who don't know anything about like Islamic religion, like, can you kind of give us a little bit of a rundown of what you all believe?
Yeah. So I learned about Islam, obviously, when I was living in Iran in school. That was like a big part of it. And some of the core principles are you believe in one God and you're faithful to that one God and you don't subscribe to any other gods. Prayer is a big one. So there's like 5 times a day prayer in Islam or for Muslims. And there are like some restrictions of what you can and cannot eat, like pork, and the meat has to be halal.
What's that mean?
So the halal is the animal is killed a certain way. And from what I know, that way is where the animal feels the least amount of pain when it's getting passed away. And I think it's like the animal doesn't go under stress, so it doesn't release too much like cortisol, essentially, when it's being killed.
So prayer 5 times a day.
Yes.
What are the times?
Or sunrise, I know, is like the first one. And then the second one, I want to say in the morning, third one in the afternoon, sunset, and then evening again. And I can be totally wrong on this, so don't totally quote me. And the prayer is like something specific. It's in Arabic that people repeat over and over again. And I had to memorize it once when I was in third grade, but I'm not even sure what the translation was because I don't think they even taught us that in school. They're just like, memorize this and this is the prayer, but it's not in Farsi. It's in Arabic. So it's like in a different language. So I feel like what's important is that Muslims or Islam, the people who they have interpreted the religion too literally. So like, for example, this prayer 5 times a day, I think it's beautiful to pray 5 times a day and like connect to our source, connect to our higher power. But I don't see the significance behind saying something in a different language that you have no understanding of what it means, right? Or like forcing yourself to pray at this certain time or else like it's bad. I think it's like important to realize, oh, this can be a suggestion. Like, oh, 5 times a day, it's just me connecting to myself. Like, I can pray about whatever I want. But like countries like Iran, for example, the way they have imposed the religion on the people is too radical, where they've taken this religion in the name of religion, they're just controlling people and telling people what they can and cannot do, what's right, what's wrong. So for example, like having to wear a veil and things, they say, oh, this comes from the Quran, which is like the Bible of Islam. Men and women can't interact with each other until they're married. This is what the Quran says. Or dogs are dirty. So halal is like what's clean, what's allowed and what's not allowed. So they say like dogs are not halal. So in Iran, dogs are seen as like dirty animals and people should not have them in their home. So it's like little things like this. I feel like these top people in leadership positions have taken things way too literally, interpreted it like too extremely in an effort to control people. And my belief is it's the same thing in the Arabic countries that are also Islamic, that also cover themselves up. Women essentially have no rights. They have no freedom. And they have diluted what Islam really is about.
Yeah. It's funny because I feel very similar to Christianity. I feel like especially I live in the Bible Belt, which is, you know, the southern part of the U.S. And it's kind of very similar of people have taken the Bible so literally that it's like, it's just too much. It's insane. Like, people are using it, like leaders in churches are using it as a way of controlling people instead of remembering exactly what everything is about. Like, religion is there as like guidelines and there to help you, but it's not used to condemn you or to control you or to make God this scary dude who's waiting to smite you if you mess up. Like, at the core of it, it's all about just a relationship with God, or like being one with God and making sure that, like, you know, you do have a relationship with him. Like, I think that that is something that we can all strive to have a better relationship. But like, oh my gosh, I'm in the same boat of like, it's crazy because I wish that more people realize, I guess a lot of people who probably think that negatively about like Islamic religion are probably people who like strictly follow Christianity and are the same people like pointing fingers. And it's like, yeah, but like, can you just put yourself in their shoes? Like, you're also being so literal. Like, you're also like condemning and judging people for things that have nothing to do with love. Like, at the end of the day, it's all about love. It's not about like what shoes you wear, or if you go to church every Sunday, or if you do communion before a certain time. Like, it's interesting that the parallels for me are very apparent.
Oh my gosh, I love that. Yeah, the core of every religion when it comes down to it is love. I was actually a religious studies major in college, and that is the core. And I think that's what all these religions are trying to promote, is that our hearts, our love is the most powerful thing. And each of them in their own unique way are trying to take us down this path that leads us to love, to loving each other, to loving ourselves, to loving God, to loving this life. And yeah, that's the core of it all. And I really believe that's the core reason why we're all alive today, is to really learn how to love. Yeah, and create that, also that relationship with our source, with God, with divine, whatever word it is we resonate with. Like, there is this higher power. And when we create this relationship with it, miracles happen, shifts happen. It's beautiful.
Absolutely. It's so beautiful. And I wish more people realized that and realized, like, just, it's one thing to talk and to preach and to say you're a good Christian or Muslim or Buddhist or whatever, mm-hmm. but like, it's very different to like actually live out what was meant to be. And that is just being good and loving others the way that you should love yourself. Like, it's, yeah. Ah, okay. Well, that gives me, it gives me a lot to think about, because so one, I love that you're a religious studies major in college, because literally my most like fascinating course I ever took in college was actually when I went abroad and I studied in Cape Town. I took a religion, sex and gender class, and it looked at religion in the scope of every, it looked at Islam, Christianity, Judaism, and I think we looked at Hinduism or Buddhism, but it was a very small, like it wasn't as talked about as much as like Islam and Christianity and Judaism, but you looked at it in the scope of like how they treat women and like women's rights and how women have like gone through the religion throughout the ages, like what the religious texts say about women. And something that really struck me, and I would love to hear your opinion about it, is like that a lot of people, I was one of these people that like was like, what? Because what we're told is so different. But what we learned in this class was actually of the main religions, Islam actually has like the most freedom and like empowerment of women than any other religion. So I was like, wait, what? Because Judaism, oh my God, the way that they treat women, like, guys, if you've never looked it up, Orthodox Judaism is not cool for women. Wow. They are treated very, very badly. But Christianity is very patriarchal, you know, like man is the head of the household and woman submits, and women are supposed to be seen as equals, but sometimes you're not. And Islam is one of those that, like, even in the religious texts, like, it very much stated like how powerful women were, and how like there were even I think like queens or like priests that were women, Yeah. Let's dive that into that a little bit. Like, give me your opinion about that and if you agree or disagree or what you learned.
So, okay, yes, I totally agree with that. And the way I see it is like these men read these texts and they're like, oh shit, women are so powerful. Like, we need to suppress their power. And I think that's why they force women to like cover themselves up and wear a veil and like dim their light and essentially be invisible. I think the men knew how powerful the women were, and it's just their way of suppressing them. That's why right now Islamic women cover themselves up. And I think that is a tool to dim their light, dim their power, for the men to be like, yeah, you're nothing. Like, you're nothing without your man. Because a woman can't go outside in the street essentially without her man. This actually incident happened to me what last time I was in Iran. It was a few years ago. And usually when you go out with like friends and family with a group. And I was there for, I think, a couple weeks, and I was staying with my cousins, and they were like just kind of tired of taking me out every day because I just wanted to see everything and do different things. And one day they just wanted to stay home. And I was like, well, I really want to go out and see this because I'm going to go back to America soon. So I decided to just go out on my own. And then I went out. I was like kind of at this like what would be considered like a shopping mall. And two random guys came up to me and they were trying to like sell me something. And I was like, no, I'm good, blah, blah, blah. And then like these police guards suddenly saw me, and in their eyes, it's like a woman should not be talking to a man. So they come up to me, and people, like when police guards come up to you, you have to be on guard because they will arrest you. If you're a single woman on your own, they will arrest you. They will take you away. And the thing is there, when they take you away, it's not like here in America where you have a phone call and you can call and be like, oh, I'm here. Like, if you want to come pick me up, it's like, no, they're like, people can't find you. They won't know where they've taken you. And your family has to have resources enabled in order to be able to find you. So I remember I was like freaking out. I was like, oh my God, I'm going to be arrested. Cause I've heard hundreds of stories about people getting arrested for just being out in public. So I like start to walk away, go into a store, the police follow me, and then they start to like talk to me and question me. And I just start like speaking English. I'm like, oh, I'm sorry, I'm a tourist, I don't know what you're saying, like blah, blah, blah. And I just pretended I had no idea what they were saying, and they left me alone. But it's things like that where I feel like they just don't want women to be in their power. They want to scare women. And this puts women in fear mode, essentially. And when you're in a fear mode, you're unaware of the infinite innate power we have as women. You're afraid to be yourself. You're afraid to use your light. You're afraid to like be who you are. And I think that's what those men in leadership are doing.
Yeah, absolutely. I love the thing that you just said about like, when you are in fear mode, you're not like tapping into like who you truly are. And you're not tapping into like, as my therapist would say, inner goddess. And so absolutely. I would love to hear your opinion on, I remember we talked about this in this class, that there are some women who actually, they love the veil. They love like, they find it empowering in itself. Can you kind of like, do you know what kind of, what their argument is, or like kind of give some light on that?
You know, just from my experience from knowing Iranian women are very against the veil because it's something they were forced to do in the 80s. Like, it's new to them. They didn't like my mom and her grandma and all those people, they didn't grow up doing this, and someone came out of nowhere and forced them to do it. So they're not supportive. They're actually kind of resentful. So just speaking of Iranians, I know that it's not something they like, but I think other Islamic people who maybe were like for generations and generations and generations, this is something they were used to. They probably like it because it wasn't as traumatic for them. They weren't forced to do it. Like, it's been going on in their lineage.
Got it. Yeah. No, that 100% makes sense. I had never thought of that, that, I mean, yeah, like because it was so newly forced, like literally the 80s, like, you know, not even that long ago, that right. It's like a new thing. Of course that, yeah, they'd probably feel resentful. And yeah, okay. That definitely makes sense for Iranians. Yeah. So do you currently practice Islam, or are you Muslim? I'm never sure how to word that. but yeah.
Like technically my parents both are, but growing up, never practiced it. Because also with Islam too, it was also forced religions, like forced upon Iranians and Persians. So before that, Persians actually had their own religion called Zoroastrian. And it's like this beautiful religion that goes with the cycle of the sun. So Persian New Year is coming up actually March 20th, 21st. And the New Year is aligned with the spring equinox. And it's a very like, it's a really beautiful religion without any like kind of restrictions like Islam has. So Islam, again, was forced upon Iranians a few hundred years ago when they got invaded. I forget by who. So that's why when the king was in power, when there was a monarchy, all these like radical religious leaders felt threatened because they saw that people aren't practicing their religion. They're becoming westernized. They're becoming free. They're having like their own beliefs and they're developing all of that.
And if people aren't unified, it's dangerous.
Exactly. Yes. Mm. So essentially, also again, I feel like Iranians are not like strict, devout Muslims. And also living in America, I haven't even met any Iranians that are living in Iran. Like all the people I was surrounded with, all of our family, all of our friends, none of them were devout Muslims. So I didn't even experience people around me as devout Muslims either. And like behind closed doors, I don't think Iranians are. In public, they have to be, or else like there are serious consequences by the government. But behind closed doors, no. And no, I've never really practiced it. The only time I practiced it was like in school where we were forced to practice. That was the only time.
The religion that you brought up, what was it called again? That Persians used to believe?
Zoroastrian.
So do people still like follow that?
Yeah. So there's... In Iran, I mean, it's not allowed. The only religion there's no freedom of religion. So there's a lot of them in America, also in LA. There's centers for that. And there's another religion, it's called Baha'i, which is another like Persian religion. And there's a lot of those too here in LA. And they have like centers for them here in LA too. So all the other religions like are practiced outside the country.
Interesting. Wow. I did not know that. That sounds like a really beautiful religion that like encompasses like equinox and the sun and like, because you know Earth is amazing. So
yes,
I love that. I really want to look. I'll have to look into that.
So Morgan Freeman actually did like a little documentary on Zoroastrian.
Oh, okay. Where is that?
I want to say you can probably YouTube it.
Guys, I'll find it and I'll put it in the show notes because I'm going to watch it.
And I love like Morgan Freeman's voice of like his narration. It's like so calming.
Oh my God. Yeah. He's absolutely amazing. Like yeah. If there's anyone that can narrate entire lives every single day, it's him.
Like, yes.
Please narrate my life. Thank you. So what was it like growing up in the U.S.? You know, once you got back from elementary school, like, were you happy to be back? Did you miss Iran at all? Like, what was it like growing up? And I know that some of my friends who were Indian or who were Persian, like, sometimes they were made fun of because they weren't, like, the stereotypical, like, blonde, blue-eyed kid. Like, so did you have a good experience growing up in America?
So when I heard that we're moving back to America, like it was the best thing I had ever heard. Like I was so happy and I still remember my happiness. I was like, I get to go back to all my friends. I get to go back to like American Candy. I get to go back to like Nickelodeon, Rugrats. I get to go back and live with my dad again. And we get to like live as a family. So I was so happy to be back. And also just to be back in like American school, let me say like, being in Iran was such a huge contrast of how lucky we are in America in every single way. Like life here is like incredible. Even like just little things like going to school here is incredible. So I was like so happy to be back. But I was gone for 4 years. So my English was broken and I was not up to date with all the latest pop culture trends going on, things like that. So when I started fifth grade, I did not fit in here at all. And I was like, so happy to be back. But then it was like, actually like a really miserable time in my life too. It was really hard to readjust back. I got bullied a lot. because like I couldn't, my English was not as good. And like, again, like you mentioned, like my skin was brown and I had, such a hard time adjusting that year. And I still remember it like so clearly. Like it was one of those like defining moments in my life where it kind of shaped who I am as well. And like trying to cope with such a big change.
Yeah. Cause that like goes into like self-worth. Like, I just did an episode about talking about like self-love and it's amazing that you're a love coach now because it's crazy the things that you believe when you're younger, then they like get deeply into like your subconscious of like, well, I'm not going to be liked as I am. So I need to change who I am to be liked
Totally.
Yeah. Just like little things like that stem from just being bullied or being different. Like, it's so hard to be a kid and be a teenager, and whether you have a bunch of friends or you don't, like everyone is just struggling so much. I have such a heart for that.
Yeah. And I feel like what I love about the time we live in, I feel like there's so much more resources now for like teenagers and kids, and there's so many more advocates too, and the light and the love that's being spread in the world is going to change things for like even kids and like the whole like bully culture and everything. I feel like it's slowly dissolving and coming to an end.
I love just like what I've seen is more and more like TV shows and acceptance of like the LGBTQ community. Like I think that is so beautiful that like I was watching Sex Education, which is a TV series on Netflix, and highly recommend if you guys have not watched it. Such a good show. But like the main character's gay, but then there's like the popular group and one of the guys in the popular group is gay and like someone makes fun of him for that. And he's like, guys, this is in 2008. Like it doesn't affect me. Like, why are you making fun of gay people? Like we're past this now.
Yes.
And it was just like, wow, yes, we have come such a long way. Like I'm sure that like, you know, people still get bullied, but like it is such a different atmosphere, thank goodness, than it used to be like when I was in school it's changed a lot.
Yeah, it's like not cool anymore to bully. Whereas I feel like back then when I was in elementary school, it's like the cool kids were the bullies, and now it's like, no, the losers are the bullies.
Like if you're bullying, you can't sit with us.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So when you got back, what year did you come back to the US then?
I came back in, I want to say it was 2002.
Damn. So were you abroad for 9/11?
Yes, I was. I actually remember I was in London when it happened. Yeah, it was, we were like on, I want to say like summer vacation from school still. So we were in London visiting my aunt, 9/11 happened, and we went back to Iran and then came back here. So yeah.
Do you remember maybe what that was like to come back to the US? Like, was it, did you have a US passport or like, just because I remember traveling, I traveled like to London and like traveling was absolutely insane. Like I think we went through 3 hours of customs just because it was so hard to like leave the country. Also, like I can't even imagine like getting into the country. Like, do you remember like what that was like?
Yeah. So yeah, I was born here in the US. So yeah, I have a US passport. And I remember like, I think my mom like mentally preparing us on our way back here, like, oh, we might have to go through customs. It might be a few hours of questioning. And I think a lot of people, like our friends and family, also mentally preparing us, like, oh, it could happen. Like you could be questioned for like a few hours, things like that. But when we did arrive at the airport, I remember it was smooth. Like we got to go through and I think it was helpful because it was just my mom and two little girls.
Nice. Oh, well, good. Yeah. Because that was, wow. It just such a shift in the US. Like it blows me away to like talk to people like my parents' age. Like racism was predominantly like for like African American culture, and it wasn't necessarily like for anybody else, like whether you're European or Middle Eastern or Australian, like there wasn't really versus like after 9/11, like people that I've talked to have just been like, yeah, it was such a crazy, like all of a sudden everyone was on alert all the time because like something like that had never happened. And it became a deeper divide of like us versus them. And it breaks my heart to like, I was watching something like it was a TV I watch a lot of TV. I feel like I've talked in this episode, but I think it's called Rami. And basically it's a dude who like grew up in the US, and he his parents are Islamic, and he's trying to figure out like, where do I fit in this religion? Like, I don't really want to pray five times a day and like do this, but also like I was raised like Islamic, and that is an important part of my culture. And so it sounds like to me that like you had a good overall experience of like, it sounds like your parents did a good job too of just assimilating you in both cultures. And it sounds like you got the best of both cultures.
Yes, I did. And yeah, I remember like just being so mindful, especially like after 9/11, like I would never ever admit I'm Muslim or my parents are Muslim or anything like that. Like I was actually like ashamed, and I was really embarrassed to be a Muslim after everything happening and just like the climate and people's perspective on Islam. And something I've realized I've carried with me like up until through now, like even if people ask me like, oh, are you Muslim? Do you practice? I'm like, no, I have nothing to do with the religion. And now that you mentioned that, I'm like, oh, I think it stemmed from 9/11 because of how everyone felt about Islam and Muslims and how, what a negative reputation, how they felt about Muslims. And it was, yeah, something that I totally like disconnected myself with and kind of put it on the back burner. Like, yeah, that's not who I am. And I'm just embarrassed to admit that I am that. And now when I look at it, I'm like, it's kind of a part of me that I was like pushing away. And now I'm starting to accept the fact like, yeah, I am. And I love that you're giving a platform for such a subject too, to realize like, just because maybe their name in the media, like Islam in the media, is not something that's like cool, not everyone like falls under the stereotypes of it too. And there are good people out there who are Muslims and believe in their religion too. And it's just a few people in places of leadership that have tainted what the religion really is about.
Yeah. And that is what I try to just start more conversations, because like so many people don't realize that. So many people want to like just put this blanket over like all of Islam of like, oh, all of them are like crazy radical people who want to like do all these bad things. But it's like, it's actually such a small, tiny, tiny, tiny percent. Like,
and the way, yeah, I see it is those people that are like maybe doing all those bad things are probably the most vulnerable people, are probably people in the position who maybe are in poverty, who have no other choice. And people come to them are like, oh, if you do X, Y, and Z, I'll feed your family, things like that. So they don't have a choice but to be like, okay, I'll be a martyr and I'll do this and I'll do these bad things. It's because it's from desperation. And the way these leaders have left the country and the economic position for people, there's a lot of people in desperation where they're like, I don't know where my next meal is going to come from, things like that. So they're doing it out of survival.
I didn't even think about that. Yeah. That's the thing I wish just more people realize, of just like putting yourself in other people's shoes and like empathy. Like, why are people doing that? And it's the hardest thing in the world, I feel like, to take a step back and not just point fingers, but it's like, those people are living such different lives and like are like, yeah, starving or struggling or in total desperation and are forced into that decision versus, you know, we, like you said, like we really are blessed to live in the US where like there's so much opportunity and government help and freedom. Like it's, yeah, people just aren't good about putting yourself in other people's shoes. It makes me sad. That just took a really sad turn. Okay, so let's talk about, you know, I love that you said, you know, through this conversation, I've kind of realized that I've rejected a part of myself. So like for people who can relate to you of just, they grew up with being maybe like a little like ashamed or embarrassed of like a certain culture or didn't feel like that was who they wanted to be and they like rejected it. Like, how do you have any like advice or like tips of how to maybe embrace your culture or to like start loving that part of you or to reconnect with parts of you that you used to reject?
Okay, that is an amazing question.
Yeah, it's deep.
Yeah, the first thing I would say is the biggest gift we can really give to this world and give to other people is totally accepting who we are. When we accept every part of ourselves, like the good, the bad, maybe things we have done in the past that we try to like forget about, and accepting that and forgiving ourselves, then we really become the best versions of ourselves. And we inspire other people to do the same thing and accept who they are. And if we live in a world where people are going out to the world from a place of like knowing they are whole, accepting who they are, then we don't have to go out into the world with voids and expecting other people to fill our voids. Sometimes, like I know from my own experience, like my first relationship, I went into it because I was like, I need someone to love me. Like I'm going to feel whole once I have a boyfriend and once he loves me. And when I look back, I'm like, that relationship wasn't sustainable because I came from a place where I was not accepting who I was and I needed someone else to do it. And then when we put this power into someone else's hand, we're always going to feel disappointed because it's no one's job to accept who we are, to love us for who we are, but ourselves. And once we really do accept who we are, there's not much room left for insecurity. So we're not going out to the world expecting to get from other people. We get to go out in the world and give our energy, give our love, give our light to other people and help other people fill up as well. It's kind of like a cup or a well, we're overflowing. But when there's parts of ourselves that we reject, that we don't accept, then we're sort of running on empty and we're looking outside of ourselves to get filled up. And it's only our job to fill ourselves up. And we can't, like I keep saying and sounding like a broken record, we can't expect it from anyone else. So it's our duty and our responsibility to see what parts of me do I need to reaccept? What parts of me did I reject before? What parts of me do I not like? What parts of me do I hate about myself? And really spending time to love all those parts.
Yes, girl. Preach it. Preach it. I am working on that every day. But yeah, especially in the past 6 months, like that's kind of been my focus of like healing the parts of me that I thought needed to be fixed for me to be accepted or for like just to accept who I am as I am and not look for somebody else to fill that belonging or that need of love, like get that for myself because then it'll overflow from me versus it being something that I'm looking for, which is not a good way to start a relationship.
Yeah. And the thing is too, when we go out and we expect to get from other people to fill ourselves up, we're just setting ourselves up for disappointment. But if we give it to ourselves and we go out into the world to give from this place of overflow, life becomes so much more meaningful and fulfilling too. Like we're going to feel good about who we are. We're going to feel good because we're like, we're adding value to society. And that's where happiness comes from. That's where joy comes from. And that's where fulfillment comes from. So if we want to live a beautiful life where we're feeling good most of the time, it comes from giving. And first we have to give it to ourselves and then go out and give. But if we're just trying to get, we're like setting ourselves up for failure essentially.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Couldn't have said it better myself. I guess to kind of like start to wrap things up, do you have any advice for maybe people who, Islamophobia is a very, very, very big thing in the US, sadly. It is become a lot more, not evident, but just more in the media since a certain president has been around. And I really wanted to have this conversation with you just to be like, you know, we're all people and we're all here to make our lives for ourselves, to love, to, we all feel fear, we all feel love, we all are people. So do you have anything for people who maybe want to be an advocate or who do want to like stand up for the people who need help with their voice or like are ridiculed or bullied because they're still very much adult bullies. That's very much a thing. But how do you have any advice for people who just, yeah, want to be more of an advocate and love everyone?
So my advice would be, let's say if you see someone like maybe being a bully, that just means they're probably feeling some pain inside and their pain is like so strong that they want to put their pain onto other people. So the biggest gift we could give those, like, I'm putting a quote unquote, those like bullies, is maybe to like sit down with them, talk to them and see what's going on and like help them and give them love and be a listening ear. They probably have gone through a hard time. Maybe they feel like nobody understands them and there is some sort of pain going on. And I think what they need the most is someone to lovingly be there for them, listen to them, and show them what love, like unconditional love, really is. And we all have the power to give a stranger unconditional love by like love, by looking them into their eyes, by showing them we get them, we understand them, that it doesn't matter what they do, we're going to accept them without any judgment. So if we encounter like a bully, I think that's what they need. They need love more than anybody else. So being that vessel of love and giving it to them and making sure they're seen, making sure they're understood and being that person for them. And when they experience this kind of presence with someone, this kind of love from someone, it can shift things for them so much. They can reevaluate and be like, oh wow, like maybe I can be this kind of person for someone else. It could really inspire them to change. And I think it's also important not to go up to someone and be like, what you did is wrong. You shouldn't be doing this. Like that's not going to work. It might just trigger people into doing it even more and be like, who are you to tell me what to do? I think it's important to like see what they're experiencing. Like you said, put yourself in their shoes and see maybe what they're going through, that they feel the need that they have to put other people down in order to feel good about themselves.
Absolutely. I think that, you know, I feel like a general theme in this podcast has been love. Love is the answer and the just the way to connect with people and to why we're here on this earth is just to love. It's why we are different than animals. Like it's, love is such a powerful thing that everyone should and deserves to feel. And so I love that you are a love coach and working on that and like helping people work through that stuff. Like tell me a little bit more about how you started coaching and what you do as a love coach. I'm so excited, and you're such an important person to have in this world.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So it actually, like, my story starts like in fifth grade, where I told you I felt like I didn't fit in. And that's when I started feeling also, like you mentioned, so unworthy. And I was like, who am I? I hated who I was. And this continued through high school and through college. I was just so disconnected from me. I had this like mask on pretending to be who people wanted me to be. So with every person I interacted with, I would be who they wanted to be, who they wanted me to be. I would say things that they wanted to hear. And I had no idea who I really was. And I was feeling more and more miserable as each year was going on. And I was like, this doesn't seem right. Like I thought I would be happier when I got older. And when I was in my early 20s and went through my first breakup, I was like heartbroken. I was like, I thought I would be in a relationship and finally feel whole. And now I feel more empty than I ever have. And that's when I realized like, I need to shift things in my life. Like I need to shift the way I feel about myself. And this is about like 7 years ago, that's when my personal development journey began. And I started like reading personal development books and getting deep into yoga at the time and just like seeking for an answer. Like, how can I be happy? Like, how can I feel good about myself? I was just feeling miserable all the time. And especially like major feelings of unworthiness. And when I, about a year ago, year and a half ago, when I heard about self-love and I started practicing it and starting to like do some shadow work and seeing what parts of myself I had rejected and reaccepting those parts and accepting everything about myself as I was and loving myself exactly the way I was and not wanting to change anything about myself until I felt good enough. That's when everything shifted. That's when I was able to be happy with who I was. And it wasn't a feeling I had ever experienced. I did experience this when I was a tiny, tiny little kid before people told me what I could do, what not to do, before I would get like punished for doing or saying a certain thing. So I went back to that childlike love I had for myself when I was like a tiny little kid. And it opened up my eyes that all of us here on this planet, we all deserve to feel in love with who we are. And once we are in love with who we are, we can really embrace the power that we all have. And with this power, we can make huge shifts and impacts on this world. Like, every single one of us is here to make an impact on this world. We all have such unique gifts, but we can't really bring awareness or know what our gifts are if we don't love ourselves. Because when we don't love ourselves, we keep rejecting who we are. We feel unworthy. So we're going to feel the same way about our gifts. And our gifts is what's going to heal this planet. Our gifts is what's going to make this world such a beautiful place. And at the same time, our gifts are going to bring abundance and wealth to our life too. So I think accepting who we are and self-love is so, so, so important, because we get to live our life to our fullest potential once we really fall back in love with who we are.
Yeah, it's not, it is about you, but it's so much more than mm-hmm. just about you. It's about all the gifts that you are holding. If you hold back, like, it's all the things that, like, you could be giving everyone else, yes. and the impact yes. that you could be giving. And so yes. it is your duty to yes. self-love and yes. learn who you are. And, like, yeah, I am here for all that. And it's a journey. It's a very,
yeah,
it's a journey that is absolutely worth it. And I highly encourage everybody to try and to tap into it and to get in touch with Yasmin, because she is, like you can hear, very passionate and very knowledgeable and going places with her coaching. I'm so excited to see you grow and transform over the like coming years, because yeah, girl, like wow, your presence is amazing, and the impact that you're going to bring to others is absolutely so powerful.
Thank you so much. And one more thing I want to add. I love that you said that self-love is about others too. Like, a lot of people have this misconception, like, oh, self-love is vain, it's conceited. Like, I've gone in this a lot too. And actually, the truth is, it's selfless. Like, we are doing this for all the people around us that love us, that we love, that we cherish, and also this planet as a whole. The more we accept who we are, the more we're able to give back and help. So yeah, it's like one of the most important things that we can do for everybody.
Yes. Could not agree more. And I love that. Yeah. You just emphasize that, because that was a game changer for me. I'm just like, it's not, yeah, it's important to do this work for you, but it's very important for everybody else that you're going to impact and to meet. And you have a gift for a reason. Like, you know, let's find it and let's make it flourish. And everything goes back to love. Always.
Yes.
Mm. Well, thank you so much for this conversation. Where can people find you?
People, come find me on the IG, on the gram. So I am at Yasmin Fate. And the way you spell that is Yasmin Fate. And come send me a DM. If you DM me, I will send you my course, Falling in Love with Yourself, for free.
Mm. Thank you so much. Listeners, take note and take advantage of that. I will put all of her stuff in the show notes if you didn't catch that, or if you need to go back, all of her information will be in the show notes. And I appreciate you offering that to our listeners. Like, thank you so much. That is so sweet. I want that course. So I'm going to send you a DM if I can.
Perfect. Yes.
Awesome. Well, thank you again, Yasmin, for coming on, and you're such a light. I'm so grateful that we had this conversation.
Me as well. Thank you for having me. And so are you. Thank you for this platform and spreading beautiful light messages too.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's just part of the work. It's part of the work. I'm doing my gifts to give gifts and impact everyone else. And you're doing the same thing. So thank you.
My pleasure.
As always, I will put the information that she shared in the show notes. Thank you so much, Yasmin, for coming on and just talking about your experience, talking about your parents' experience, talking about Iran in general. I seriously learned so much, and I appreciate you so much coming on and sharing your story. And I just appreciate you, girl. So guys, thank you for tuning in. I hope that you learned some things from this episode. If you did, please share with a friend, screenshot and put this on your stories or share it on social media and let us know that you listened. It always makes my day to see you guys sharing and listen to the episodes. And yeah, I hope you have a great rest of your week. Stay safe out there. And yeah, until next time, guys, peace.